Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
There's a high fly ball
from KMOX Sports.
That's hit deep to left field, and it's a gutter.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado. There's a moment for you.
Welcome to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And the driving jam time.
And the Billikens win this one.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
Comeback pattern caught. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Now, Sports Open Line on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Great to be with you guys. Welcome into Monday night. We're getting ready for the national championship game in college football. The NFL season is over. The Blues had a fun win the other day. In other words, we have sports. It was also Black Monday in the NFL, the day that everybody that's going to get fired gets fired. Although some teams are terrible and they just drag it out and they end up making a decision like 2 weeks down the road when it doesn't make, when it just doesn't make any sense to wait. We're going to get to a little bit of all of that stuff tonight here in this hour of the show. I want to start with college football because I want to get these thoughts in before the game is played. And I know the broadcast started at the top of the hour, started at 7 o'clock. But as we all know, the game's never going to start at that time. It's going to be some weird, I don't know exactly when, but it's going to be somewhere in the next little bit. But I wanted to start off with some thoughts on the national championship game. Wanted to get into college football playoff expansion plans, running into a couple of roadblocks here in recent days. Because, look, we're looking at a matchup between two SEC teams in the championship game. I don't mind it because I don't really treat conferences like they're my favorite teams. I don't care what conference any of these teams come from unless it's my team. And, in that case, I care about my team. Otherwise, I just want to see the best possible games. And I think that's what we're going to get with Alabama and Georgia. That said, it's a big problem for college football that the southeastern part of the country, not just the SEC, but essentially the SEC and Clemson, have just dominated college football. And we're going, it's getting to the point where we're almost at two decades of the same schools basically winning every year. I mean, look, Alabama's a dynasty, right? I mean, we all know that. Not hard to figure out that what they have going is unlike anything we've seen in the past. It's a dynasty. And if you look at, the way that this is set up, it's not rigged, it's not fixed or anything, but the way it is right now, it is entirely about the southeastern part of the country, and that's not good for college football because you've got whole legions of fans that don't have a chance coming into the year, right? I mean, if you're a Pac-12 fan, your team's probably not even going to get in, let alone win the championship. I mean, they can't even get in. For the Big 12, for the ACC, you might get one here and there. And obviously, in the Big 10, all the other big conferences, you might get one or two out of those three conferences in there. But the SEC in most years is probably going to have two teams. And if you look at it, I mean, it's crazy. It's going to be this way this year. But the last time that a team outside of the southeastern region of the United States won a championship was 2014 at Ohio State. And the last time before that was Texas in 2005. So from 2006 until this year, and this is 15, 16 seasons. One team that is not based in the southeast part of the country won a national championship. So for 15 years, so you want to go, I mean, we know that the southern teams have dominated more than that. I mean, you could go back 20, 25 years because And we don't count Texas and USC as quote-unquote Southeast, obviously. One's in the Southwest, one's the Pacific, one's the West Coast. But you can go all the way back to, you know, the start of the decade in 2001 with Miami winning. And it's been a, you know, a 20-plus year run of just completely dominated by teams in the South, with I think only four or five champions that come outside of that region in more than 20 years. So that's a problem. I mean, you know, and they can't get past that. And we're going to get to that in a few minutes. The college football playoff expansion talks have been a problem because the people that run these conferences can't pull their heads out of their butts long enough to figure out what's best for the sport. They're too worried about, well, I want to make sure. I want to make sure that my team gets in there. Listen, you just make it so there are more teams. So long as there are only four, this dynamic's not going to change. And I know that it doesn't mean that, you know, if by adding more, it doesn't mean that these teams are automatically going to lose. It's just going to make it a little tougher. And it's just, more importantly, it's going to give more places hope. We'll get to that in a minute. As for tonight's game, couple quick thoughts, and then I'll make my pick for tonight. I already made it on Twitter, so it's not like I'm hiding anything, but I want to make this case first, okay? So Georgia's favored by three coming into tonight. I've seen 2.5, seen three, but it's been three here later in the evening. So let me get this straight. Georgia's favored by three, even though Alabama just smoked them a month ago, even though Kirby Smart's never beaten Nick Saban, even though Nick Saban is 25-1 in his life against his former assistants when they've become head coaches elsewhere. Alabama's got the Heisman Trophy winner at quarterback, so a massively more talented quarterback in the head-to-head matchup, and Georgia's favored. How's that? Now, guys in Vegas know what they're doing, obviously. You don't have all of those hotels and palaces in the desert for nothing. But I think this also tells me more about the betting public than it does what Vegas actually thinks. People don't want Alabama to keep on winning, which is understandable. Georgia just blew up a Michigan team that people thought was pretty good. And for most of the year, Georgia was considered the number one team. Not to mention the fact that Georgia has a really large, very enthusiastic fan base. And I'm sure that their betting habits had something to do with the way the line moved or didn't move over the course of the last week and a half. But I can't find like a really compelling argument that says Georgia's going to win this game. And you can talk about how Georgia beat up on Michigan, but Alabama's not Michigan, number one. They just showed that they know exactly how to beat Georgia when they played them a month ago in the SEC championship game. Now, it doesn't mean that Georgia won't win. I'm pulling for Georgia. Like, my rooting interest is for somebody that hasn't won here in a while. Bama's had enough wins, man. I mean, I don't need to see another Alabama championship. I mean, what, since 2009, they've won 2, 4, 6. I mean, I don't need another one. Doesn't do me any good. I'd love to see a team in Georgia win for the first time since 1980. That'd be cool. I'm all right. I'd be good with that. So I want Georgia to win. I don't think they will. I think Alabama's going to win. I can't find anything that points to Georgia winning this game. Alabama beat them head-to-head, has the better coach, and has the better quarterback. Not only is Bryce Young the Heisman Trophy winner, but he's also probably going to be in the conversation for the number one pick in the draft next year. I mean, and Stetson Bennett has had a really nice year, but he's a former walk-on who's had to work his way up. And that's another reason, by the way, why I'm kind of rooting for him. I like the underdog story there with Stetson Bennett. But I can't come up with a really strong, compelling reason that says Georgia's going to win this game. Georgia beat Michigan by physically beating them up, and you just don't do that to Alabama. The teams that have beaten Alabama in the college football playoff in recent years have done so with elite quarterback play and incredibly creative offensive coaches. And I just don't see that on the Georgia side. So I'm picking Alabama, even though I'm going to be sitting here hoping that Georgia wins just because it'd be something different. It's not totally different. It's still the SEC. You know, it's still a team from the Southeast, but at least it would be a team we haven't seen raise the trophy since 1980, which would be something. So that's where we sit right now on this. I want to talk a little bit more about the college football playoff expansion conversations falling apart. And I don't know why this has to be difficult. It's a simple concept, but each of these conferences has their own kind of complaint about how things are working. And look, no matter what it is, this is kind of like the negotiations between Major League Baseball and the players, right? It shouldn't be this complicated to simply say, look, we need a better system for our customers because we have too many customers that are pretty much blacked out of the championship race. Our entire West Coast base of customers knows that they have no chance in any given year of winning a championship, and we need to fix that and at least provide the hope that could keep people excited about the sport. We'll get to that next up on KMOX.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
There's a high fly ball.
Welcome back to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And it's a gunner.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
And the Billikens win this one.
Touchdown, Kansas City.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, so let's before we get any further on the NFL, and I'm going to talk some Blues here in a couple of minutes as well. What a game Sunday! What a wild ending for the Blues on Sunday. But they did something that hasn't happened very much in the NHL in recent. Well, in ever years. We'll get to that coming up in a little bit. I wanted to spend just a couple more minutes on the college football playoff, and obviously not this year, but the expansion of the college football playoff talks. And what drives me crazy about this is, number one, college football should have, I mean, like the power brokers in college football should have been on top of this when they decided to expand to four, to go to a playoff to begin with. Four teams was never going to be enough. You need to make sure that you're including more of the country. Again, it's just good marketing. It's bad business to do something that can limit the number of fans that come into the year. And by the way, come into the final month of the year knowing their team has a chance to win a championship. That matters, man. I mean, and the problem that people have with college football, and I think it's a correct one, the problem that I have with college football, as somebody that loves the sport, that watches every Saturday, every single year. I mean, I love college football, and I have going back to the 1980s, the early 80s. It's because that's when I was a kid and I started paying attention. But you can't. It can't be as easy to just eliminate certain parts of the country. I mean, basically anything west of the Rockies has been eliminated in this era. It's eliminated. And, I mean, we're going back 16, 17, 18 years to when, you know, the USC program was great in the early 2000s. And it is structural. It's not necessarily bias that leads to it, but it is structural. Like, if you don't have numbers, teams don't have chances. And whenever it's limited to just two or four teams, you're not going to be able to keep everybody involved. So the power brokers in college football now are all caught up in the little things. They're all caught up in the fight about 8 versus 12, or trying to make sure that they can have their control over the situation. The ACC was apparently a problem in these conversations, which is stupid because the ACC really doesn't have much power in this. Outside of Clemson, the conference has been pretty brutal for, well, really as long as I can remember. Well, yeah, the conference as a whole has been bad forever. They've always had somebody that was really good, right? For a long time, it was Florida State. Now, recently, it's been Clemson. So they've always had it covered one way or another with the top end, but they've never had any really good quality balance. And all of that infighting puts the sport in a position where you're pushing yourself further and further down the road away from the sport being accessible to people outside of the southeastern part of the country. I mean, sure, Ohio State, Michigan, those teams will get their crack every so often. You know, the occasional Big 12, you know, Oklahoma's gotten in there here and there. But the Pac-12 is completely left out. And again, it's not just about that, but that's a huge region of the country, man. I mean, you're just eliminating the state of California from having a rooting interest in terms of having a chance to win a national championship. And by the way, that also is part of what continues the disparity, between the rosters of SEC teams and those others. Where do you think all the five-star recruits want to go, man? They want to go someplace where they have a chance to win a national championship. Well, in the lifetime of all these recruits, if you're not going to Alabama, Clemson, LSU, Florida, you're not winning a championship. So if you're a five-star guy, why would you go to Texas? Why would you go to USC? Why would you go to Washington when you could just go to Alabama and not only have your chance at a national championship, but have a pretty strong shot at being the high draft pick that you want to be too? Now, I think the name, image, and likeness stuff is starting to change this, right? We've seen this in a number of different places, but some really big recruits are choosing interesting new places to go to school. And some of it has to do with the name, image, and license. When you can be the big dog, there may be more financial opportunities for you than if you're just one of six or seven five-star guys at Alabama or LSU or Texas A&M or whatever. And I do think that over time, it's not happening all right now, but over time we are going to start to see more of that dynamic play out where, you know, if you're going to go to the big school and be one of many, you're not going to have as much of an earning opportunity as if you go to the mid-range school, but you're the top dog, and maybe you're near a big city. And again, look at the opportunities that'll be there for Luther Burden at Mizzou, being an in-state guy who is clearly the big guy on camp, right? He's the BMOC already. He's not even in school yet. He's the BMOC. He's a big man on campus. He's the five-star. He's the dude. The people that want to spend money on the program are going to want to spend money on him. And I do think over time that's going to help spread some of the talent out. Not all of it, maybe not even enough of it, but it's going to spread some of that talent out. But you also need to have more opportunity to win a trophy. As things have been here in recent years, I don't think there are teams out there that are going to, you know, come in and beat what we've seen from Bama and Clemson in recent years and how strong they've been. We've seen in sports, right, it's all about opportunity. If you're not in the game, if you're not in the tournament, you're not going to have a chance at pulling off the upset. Simply having the game is the opportunity. Most of these are big physical mismatches, and I know we've got to keep that in mind. But still, opportunity is opportunity. If you never get the chance, you're never going to get to do it. And they will eventually expand the playoffs. They will eventually get to either an 8-team or a 12-team format. I'm a fan of the more. I would rather have 12 than 8. 8 would be fine, but I'll take 12. And we understand that there are going to be some early blowouts. There already are in the semifinal games, but it's more money to go around. It opens the door to more parts of the country actually having a chance to get in and have a chance to win the championship. And even if they can't win the championship, just have the hope, man. Hope sells tickets. Hope gets people excited. It fills up stadiums, man. And it is still an entertainment event. You see all those places that know coming into the year, they know that there's no chance. It's the beauty of pro sports, by the way. Why do you think the NFL expanded their playoffs? Well, sure, it's more money because you've got more TV games. But it's also, in part, more fan bases remaining engaged late into the season. Because you got more opportunities. And we've seen in professional sports, lower-seeded teams have won championships. Doesn't usually happen in the NBA, but it's happened in the NHL, the NFL, and in Major League Baseball with some regularity. And ideally, you'd have one or two of those here and there in college football down the road as well. All right, coming up next, we're going to change gears. I want to get to some hockey. Awesome win for the Blues on Sunday. Wasn't a great game, but it was a great last 46 seconds. What a way to pull one out. And by the way, saw this today from NHL stats. Very rare what the Blues did on Sunday in picking up a win in a game that they trailed, a regulation win in a game they trailed in the final minute of regulation play. We'll tell you how many other times that had happened before Sunday in NHL history and talk a bit about where the team is right now coming up next on KMOX. Awesome win for the Blues on Sunday. So, I mean, I'm sure you all know the story by now. I mean, since yesterday afternoon, it's been a pretty big, as you imagine, a pretty big buzz story. So they beat Dallas 2-1. They were down 1-0 with 46 seconds left. And then after a whole bunch of chaos, the Blues end up winning in regulation, no less. 2-1. That is crazy. To be down 1-0 with 46 seconds left and win the game in regulation is crazy. And not only is it crazy, it's damn near unprecedented. Now, I saw the graphic on this on Jeremy Rutherford's story on The Athletic, but it was a number put out by the NHL. It's NHL stats, and the NHL PR account is the one that posted this on Twitter. But until yesterday, there had only been 10 other instances in the history of the National Hockey League. I'm assuming this is regular season games, by the way, of teams winning in regulation after trailing in the final minute of the third period. So obviously the Blues just did that to Dallas on Sunday. The time that it happened before that was in March of 2019. The Bruins did it to Florida. Before that, it was 2011. Before that, 2010. Before that, 06. Before that, 2001. Before that, 1995. I mean, again, it had only happened 10 times in the history of the National Hockey League before Sunday. So that's a pretty unique thing. Normally, obviously, if there's a deficit overcome in the final minute, usually it's a tie, you get to overtime, and you win there. You don't normally see that chaos that we saw. But, you know, it's a good thing. I mean, the Blues caught a break, I think. I think they caught a break. I think, you know, Klingberg really did deserve to have a penalty call when he went to the ice. Shen grabbed the stick. He went down, no call. And when he got up, the slash was legit. I mean, that put the Blues on the power play. The slash was a legit slash. But as Klingberg put it himself, he's like, yeah, look, that's a penalty. But how come they didn't call the one before when I got tripped in the corner? And he had a good point. I mean, if that call was not made the other way around, you know, all of us that follow the Blues would have been hacked off about that as well. But regardless, the Blues got their power play opportunity. They scored with 47 seconds left, and then they scored again 18 seconds later, also on the power play. So I got to give them a lot of credit for fight. And I thought some of the things that Craig Berube said after the game were really – really smart. Like, you know, it wasn't the most beautiful game, but Jordan Binnington kept you in it, you know, made a handful of really important saves to keep it at 1-0. You didn't quit fighting. You got your opportunities in the final minute. Your big guys came through. I know it's not been a great offensive year, at least on the goal scoring front for Ryan O'Reilly, but he picked up a big goal to tie the game there. Jordan Kyrou continues to have a brilliant season. Already at 14 goals, and we're not halfway through the season yet. You're 36 games into the season, so you know we got a team here in this Blues team. Aside from yesterday was great, and by the way, they've been really good here of late too. Even though they were missing three guys for this game on Sunday, because just before the weekend, we found out that Tarasenko and Wallman and Perunovic were going into the COVID protocol today. Today, now it's Shen and Pareko that are in there too, which is it's just remarkable. And again, I know other teams are dealing with the same thing. You know, I'm not crying about the Blues. It's been rough as far as what they've been missing for the last month or so, but everybody's dealing with it. But the Blues have been on such a good run since the early part. It's basically been a month now. If you go back to December 7th, the Blues have only lost three games in that time. They were 12-8-4 going into play in that game against Florida on December 7th. So they were 12-8-4. And they are now 21-10-5. So again, pretty good, 9-2-1 during that stretch. And some good wins in there against good teams too. You know, the loss against Pittsburgh was a bit frustrating with the blown lead. But, you know, Pittsburgh's been one of the hottest teams in the NHL here in the last two or three weeks. So, you know, again, not that big of a deal. But you're in a really good spot despite all the players in and out of the lineup. Hopefully you get to a point where you're past it, where everybody's had COVID and they're not going to test positive again. At least I hope not. You know, things are changing so rapidly. And I'm kind of hoping that you can go 4, 5, 6 months without getting it again. Although, you know, it's been a little bit more random than that. It's very unpredictable. But the more I watch of the team, and I said this last week, so I know I'm repeating myself a little bit, but the more I watch this team, the more I love just how much depth they bring to the table. I mean, today, at this point, it looks like you have at least 4 or 5, if not 6 players that are on a pace for a 30-goal season. Now, we don't know that they're going to maintain that, right? We don't know that they're all going to be healthy. We don't know what they're going to be future COVID problems later in the year or what. But with Kyrou and Tarasenko already at 14 goals, Buchnevich and Barbashev with 13, Saad is at 12. They're not all exactly on a 30-goal pace, but they're all within range of it. And because we're not halfway through the season yet. We're getting pretty close, but we're not halfway through the season yet. And so many other guys are having good years, but they've missed so many games that, you know, you don't really look at it. If you look at it on a per-game basis, David Perron's having a hell of a year. You know, just as an example. I still think you might be shopping for another defenseman at some point. It sure sounds, I mean, I'm not saying that there's nothing happening when it comes to Vladdy. And the trade deadline and all that, because, I mean, I know we had the trade request / demand during the offseason. I don't know if that's all changed or not, but you got to think that it's moving in the right direction in favor of the Blues, right? I mean, the more things go, like, winning is fun. Scoring a lot of goals is fun. He's got a good, you know, good group of guys that he's been playing with that have, you know, showed a good bit of continuity and success. I know they're not able to keep everything together for very long because of the way the lineup's been constantly disrupted. But I do think here, just kind of trying to be optimistic about this, I do think things are going to settle down in the next month or so. You know, again, I'm not trying to think of myself as Nostradamus or anything like that, but, you know, the COVID spikes that we're seeing now in sports and in the real world were totally predictable. I mean, we had a spike in December after Thanksgiving. It only stood to reason that you were going to have these spikes following the holidays because people are traveling. You're seeing people you don't always see. That's how things get out of hand. And I would say that sometime in the next couple of months, it'll probably calm down again. And that'll be, I think, true for the sports world as well. So as we get a little deeper into the season for the Blues, I do think you're going to see them have a chance to settle in a little bit, get more continuity with the guys all being out there at the same time. So by mid to late February, I have a good feeling about where this team is going to be. I think this. I know I said this when I was filling in for Charlie Brennan right before the new year. In fact, it was on New Year's Eve that I said it. That this team's going to make a deep playoff run. I think they have everything they need to go deep. I don't know that it's going to include a Stanley Cup run. I'm not there. Not yet, anyway. But I think they have something that a lot of other teams don't, and that is a whole bunch of depth, right? So many of the teams that you talk about, so many of the top teams are very top-heavy. And they don't have as many guys, you know, guys that play on the third line, heck, even on the fourth line, that can score goals, that can move up and down the lineup. I mean, this team has that. You got guys that play on the fourth line that could easily play regularly on the third line for other teams and occasionally, if necessary, jump up onto the second line. But this team doesn't even really have a top line. They have three top lines, to me, when they're healthy. Guys that, you know, you've got a group that's really gifted offensively, depending on how you want to sort them out. But, you know, when you had the Russians together, really gifted unit with, you know, guys that can also play the two-way game. Your top line is a shutdown line and an offensive generator. I really love the direction this is heading. And, you know, even more than that, I'm enjoying the direction that this is heading with goaltending, too. You know, Binnington was excellent on Sunday, kept the team in the game. We all know what he's capable of when he catches a hot streak, right? And so much of making a run in the playoffs is about that position. And that position just kind of, again, being in the right place at the right time, being hot at the right time. But Ville Husso's been really good this year. He's been, to me, one of the most improved players on the roster. When he's gotten a chance to play, he's played well. And you know you got some depth there, too. I mean, Charlie Lindgren was awesome, man. He was unbelievable. He saved 96% of the shots sent his way when he was with the team for five games. That's crazy. Hopefully, nothing against Charlie. He did a good job for the team. Hopefully, you don't need to see him at any point between now and the end of the season. But I'm liking where the team's going. They keep on doing it. And I know, look, they're going to be down. Not 100%, but it looks like they're going to be down probably those five players when they take on Seattle on Thursday. Hopefully, they'll get some of them back relatively soon. But even through all the mess, even through all the craziness, you're winning games. You're stacking up points. I mean, you're in a position where, you know, you're behind only Nashville in the division. You've got them coming to town here in a little bit, like next week. I know you've got, I know that Colorado and Minnesota have games in hand on you, so they could catch you. But I don't see a team in the West that you can't beat in a seven-game playoff series. I don't see a single one. Not in your division, not in the Pacific. And honestly, I don't know that there's a team in the Eastern Conference you can't beat either in a seven-game series. So fingers crossed, knock on wood, do whatever you do to try to generate some good luck. If they get some health and they get some, I don't want to say better COVID luck. It's not about luck. It's just about getting through it all, right? They get everybody back from that. I think this team is a real contender. And, you know, I know things can change. I've been wrong about things before, but I love the way the team comes together the closer they get to being healthy. And I know they've got guys out now, but hopefully we'll have that dynamic here within the next few weeks. All right, coming up next, we're going to wrap up the NFL regular season. Take a look at who's in the playoffs, the new playoff format. And, of course, today was Black Monday in the NFL, the day that GMs and coaches get their pink slips if they've been bad enough for long enough. We'll get to that next up on KMOX.
There's a high fly ball.
Welcome back to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And it's a gunner.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
And the Billikens win this one.
Touchdown, Kansas City.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, final few minutes. Obviously, I want to wrap it up with a little NFL. The playoffs are coming up this weekend or starting up this weekend. You got the new format now with a whole lot more teams involved. And again, even the NFL, even the National Football League knows that more playoffs is better. Like, even they know that. So what you have now are seven teams in each conference. It's the new format. One team gets the bye, the top seed, in each conference, and then everybody else plays. So nice and easy, good matchups. I think we got some fun stories. Had some chaos yesterday. A few few playoff spots that came down to the final weekend of the regular season, some seeding that came down to that. I know everybody was, you know, kind of hacked off during the Chargers-Raiders game at the end because the Chargers called a timeout. Called the timeout late in the game. Like, what'd they do that? They cost themselves the game. Like, no, they didn't. The Raiders were going to run the football, and the Chargers wanted to put their best run defense out there, which is why they called timeout, and they failed. The real story is the failure to stop the run on the 3rd and 4, which allowed the Raiders to kick a closer field goal. The fact that the Raiders were able to convert the first down on that, get closer, and kick an easier field goal, that's the story. The timeout didn't lead to any of that. The Raiders weren't going to kneel on the ball. They were going to run the ball. They were going to hand it off to see if they could gain any yards and then try to kick the winner from whatever distance they had. And if it was a tie, well, then both of them got in. It wasn't the end of the world. But the Raiders weren't going to do anything that would lead to a turnover or would likely lead to a turnover, and they weren't going to kneel. Not when you're in shotgun formation. This is the thing that drives me crazy about Twitter and social media in general, but Twitter in particular. There were actually people last night arguing like, well, just because they're in shotgun doesn't mean they can't kneel, right? But nobody does that. That's why you have the victory formation. When you're going to kneel, when you're going to give yourself up, you get up close because it's a cleaner exchange, and then you take a knee. People don't kneel from the shotgun. I'm not going to tell you that it's never happened in the history of football. I'm not going to tell you it's not possible, but nobody does it. So don't argue those stupid things. But anyway, the way it all played out, I think gave us some interesting matchups for the first round of the playoffs starting up on Saturday. Raiders and Bengals should be fun. Raiders just squeaked in. You know, the Bengals are an interesting team. Like, Joe Burrow is really becoming a legitimate dude in the NFL. Like, he's becoming a really legit top quarterback. And, a little bit of a playoff run here would certainly push him further in that conversation. That's a team that I'm keeping an eye on, the Bengals. I'm not sure that they're ready for a big, big run, but they might be ready for a little bit of a run here. Maybe win a couple games in the playoffs. Patriots and Bills is a fun matchup. Eagles, Buccaneers. I don't like the Eagles. I mean, they found their way in. They're 9-8, but they're kind of crappy, to be honest with you. I think Tampa Bay is going to roll them. Niners, Cowboys is fun. I like Dallas's team. I think they're, explosive offense. Some of the best individual defensive players in the league with Micah Parsons and Trayvon Diggs. But the Niners are a scary team to me. They're ugly. I don't really believe in Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't think they're going to win the game. But they do have a way of uglying things up. They can't run the football when they're reasonably healthy. And I know they're not totally, but they're way more healthy than they were early in the season. That'll be interesting. Chiefs and Steelers. Looks like it should be a walk. Love the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs have a great – I really love that team. I think they have another big run in them. I know they've been ugly and weird and awkward, and it took them a long time to sort through how they were going to keep on putting up points with everybody taking away big plays from them. And I'm not – I don't know what I really like in the AFC right now. Nobody does a whole lot for me. I mean, like, Tennessee's the number one seed. And by the way, they're supposed to get Derrick Henry back for the playoffs, which makes them a completely different beast in the playoffs. But even then, I don't know. I don't love anybody in the AFC. I'm going to go leaning towards the Chiefs. But it wouldn't shock me. Actually, it would shock me if they lost this weekend, but it wouldn't shock me if they lost any time after that. I don't know what to think of the Patriots. The Bills have been weird. I thought the Bills were going to be better this year than they ended up being. The NFC is a little bit more of a sure thing. I'm looking forward. By the way, I didn't mention this, the Monday game, the Cardinals and the Rams. How about that? The two former St. Louis teams meeting in the playoffs. We've got that game here on KMOX next Monday night, too. So it'll be the Cardinals and the Rams on Monday night for the final wild card round game. I think that'll be fun, too. Kyler Murray and Matt Stafford. I think it's easy to root for the Arizona team in that one, isn't it? I mean, I know they left, too, but that was a lot longer ago. And on the NFC side, I don't really think that I think clearly Green Bay's the favorite, right? I mean, not only do they have the best, most explosive quarterback in the NFL in Aaron Rodgers, and it's not like he's that far and away above everybody else, but he's, well, I don't know.
I hate to say that. He's in that top group of three or four guys that are all pretty close to the same, if you ask me. But they to have a home field advantage is actually a really big deal. Going to Lambeau in January, not fun. I guess I'll lean toward them, but I hate leaning toward the favorites. It's boring. My team to watch is Dallas. I think they're capable of a big run this year. All right, that's going to wrap it up for tonight. Hancock and Kelly coming up with At Your Service after the top of the hour. We'll talk to you tomorrow here on KMOX.